want to turn off by itself.
So. How many hours do you get per tape?
At that speed, two.
2 hours? I think that's enough. Is it ready to go?
Oh, anytime.
Okay. I'm Ralph Payne. I'm a physician with the Public Health Service, Indian Health Service at Shures, Nevada. I'm describing an Indian Singh, which I attended in September of 1969. I'm describing this Singh in April of 1970, and my description will be based on my recollections of this event a few months back. Since I arrived in Shures in 1967, and I had an interest in the Indian way of life and their ceremonies, and one of the nurses at the hospital called to my attention the fact that a Singh was taking place at Allison McMaster's house, and she had asked the Indian doctor whether I could attend. The Indian doctor, as I recall, his name was John Harris, and he was from Wyoming. And he was on his circuit through Shures, which comes about every 6 months. And he was having a four-day Singh, and she had asked him if I could attend the second Singh. He said that I would have to contact him and talk with him directly, which I did, and he said it would be okay for me to be an observer. I went to the McMaster's place in the early evening and found that the people were congregating, taking individual sweat baths in the afternoon, and were getting ready for the evening ceremony. And it was the manner was of just a regular social event, a lot of gaiety, joking, conversation, like a family reunion. People there were from Yerington, Fallon, Shures, and Bishop, and other places, I'm sure.
How many did you know?
I'd say, there were at least 50 or 60 people, perhaps more.
Doesn't bother you to find out.
No,
that's fine. What was the age group?
Well, I noticed that the most people were, I would say, 50 years and older. They were, there were some younger, I'd say, families 35, 40, and their children are in attendance. And I can see offhand, say, perhaps four families from Shures who had children ranging from 3 years old to through the grade schools there. Mm-hmm. There are a couple of teenagers, high school students from Carson City there too. One girl I know in particular who was being followed at the hospital for a medical problem, and her parents were hesitant about letting this girl have surgery, and they were having her treated, and as I understand it, the Indian doctor was giving her special treatments and special sings and special sweats. And hearsay has it that she also spent some time with him in Wyoming.
Yeah, but this is late.
Yeah, right. I saw a number of people that I knew who I had seen at the clinic. There was a little bit of embarrassment on their part, I think, that they hadn't planned on me being there. And there were some very interesting comments, jovial, but it was a nervous type of humor about if I'd known you were coming, I'd have worn a wig or something like this. But a number of our middle-aged people who routinely come to our clinics were there. And I sat outside with just by myself, would you want me to mention names, or does it make any difference?
I would enjoy having names mentioned. Okay. I don't see any reason, because of the fact that I've already been told a lot of this from the Indian's point of view. The interesting thing is that this is from your point of view, too.
Okay, well, I saw people that I knew and have what I consider friendly relationships with the clinic, Amy Williams and Fallon, Iwan Allen, and just had social conversation with them. Edna Foster, Edna Jones was there. Stan and Frank and his entire family was there. Joe Smith and his family with the Franks were there. These were some of the kids come in. Kids are running around playing tag and all that, and some of the people were coming out of their sweat baths, and which I understand they have sweats every Sunday. I'm not sure, but somebody said that every Sunday, if you wanted to go out to McMaster's for a sweat, that it was available. I was trying to get filled in on what's going on, and Irma Foster, the nurse's aide, who sort of set me up for my, for me, the reason I was there, didn't understand what was going on. She was filling me in what she had heard from her mother and her friends and all this. And I was told that everybody would gather into one of the rooms of the house, and they'd have the formal singing ceremony there as on a group therapy. That all the individual therapy was done in the afternoons. On a one-to-one relationship between the Indian doctor and the patient. This is going to be scattered with medical terminology instead of it.
That's perfect.
But there was a time when, you know, everybody said, let's get in the room. And it was a room perhaps 20 foot by 15 feet, a living room type. Feeling very self-conscious, of course. Didn't want to make a big ruckus and stick out, so I sort of hung back.
You were the only white one?
Right. Mm-hmm. There were a few, I'd say five or six people who were just observers also, that we were just sort of being placed. You know, somebody tell us to go over there. So we were first told we'd have to sit in this little side room, like it would be a bedroom off a living room, and observe from in there because the room would probably be full. I should say that I was introduced to Mr. Harris, or the Indian doctor, and I told him, you know, who I was. I was introduced to who I was and why I was there, and he sort of nodded approval and had very little conversation with him.
His name, as far as you know, is what?
I think so. I'd have to check on this.
John Harris.
I think. Mm-hmm. I'm pretty sure that's his name, as I recall. And so then I was told that he had suggested that I sit in the big room, and I was told to sit in a chair. I was the only observer that was seated. All the other observers were told to stand.
Oh, I see.
And so I felt like I was sort of in a position of honor in a way, and it felt like sort of accepted then that my presence was felt to be there more than just idle curiosity, but that I had some interest. And so there was a lot of food in the room that they planned. They said that the ceremony ends with a meal, so people were pushing food, potluck type food around and getting situated.
Now, do you mind if I interrupt you?
Sure.
Is there a table in the room?
There's no table in the room. It's all piled up on a counter on one side of the room.
On one side of the room, I see.
There's a man who I didn't recognize, who I think was from Bishop, who was sort of like the director, and he was getting everybody seated. And the people who wanted to actively participate in the sing had signed up or had talked with the Indian doctor. And as I understand it, a individual or a family consults the Indian doctor, indicates that he wants to be in the sing.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess would tell him why he would want to participate in the sing. And the Indian doctor, as I understand, tells them he has to present a pipe. And pipe is in quotation marks. And the pipes are sticks, like little stick dolls, with a round head. And they are told to get a particular color cloth. And they make, it looks like a lollipop. With this cloth over the head and then the stick. And it's called the pipe. And that each family or each individual has a particular color, so he has a sort of a representation, an object that represents him. So there's a particular order in which people's name was down on a piece of paper. They just were setting everybody up in an order, and they had them in three lines sitting down on the floor. All the observers were around on the periphery of the room. But the people who are participating are sitting on the floor in a prearranged order, which was in three lines. And this order was written on a piece of paper that this individual, the director-like individual, had, was calling them out, so you sit here, was placing them.
And are these three lines opposite somebody else? Or
okay, the room is an oblong room, and on one of the long sides, the Indian doctor and his singers and drummers are going to be sitting with their back on that. On the other side of the room, facing them, are the three lines of people participating. Mm-hmm. So the three lines are parallel to each other, and they all face the musicians, or the drummer and the singer and the Indian man, Indian doctor. Then the outsiders are sort of crammed in the corners and around, and I'm sitting. I am sitting as I look to the left and to the rear. My back is in the left corner, as you face, I'll call it the stage, or where the ceremony will be taking place.
Now the pipe situation is, are they grouped according to these colors?
Yeah, I'll go into that when I want to describe the altar. I'll call it the altar.
Right.
Because these are involved in a particular order. Mm-hmm. I assume a particular order there. But everybody gets situated. And the room is going to be totally black. I was informed that I need to remove anything that might reflect light. So I was told I had to take off my glasses and remove my watch. My ring, they mentioned I had to take off my wedding ring. The windows have been taped up with black paper. I was also told that once you were in the room, you couldn't leave until the ceremony was over. And if the ceremony started, you couldn't get in the room. So everybody had to be there on time. And they started to seal up the room then while everybody was getting situated. And they taped over the door and nailed up black blankets and things like this. So the room was airtight, essentially. And no light was allowed in or out from the outside.
As this I'm taking this, though,
the electric light was on still. Because they're still setting the scene, right?
Right.
This, I was told, is because any opening into the room would allow the spirits to escape once they were called into the room.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of this information, the reasons and the conclusions I gathered from Irma Foster, who was giving it to me secondhand too, is what she was mm-hmm. told. The Indian doctor began to open up his ceremonial packet, and he had a rectangular shaped rug, which he rolled out first, had a lot of sage in it, both in bundles and in little wads, I guess you could call it. And there were some cans, tin cans, which he laid around the periphery of this rug. And he put the pipes, these pipes, into that. And they were grouped with colors. So one can would maybe hold five or six red-colored pipes.
There's a pipe for each person that's...
So I assume that there were, say, if there were five red ones, that the red represented a particular family, and there were five people in that family who wanted to participate in the same. He also laid out a feather fan type, looked like an eagle feather fan.
Mm-hmm.
He had a ceremonial pipe, like it, they smoke, like mm-hmm. a calumet pipe, which he laid out. While he was doing this, then his assistants began to pass around a bowl containing smoldering sage. And everybody, both the active participants and the observers, as I recall, were offered the smoke from this sage. And as I observed the people, they would take the smoke and wave it into their face and into their arms. And everybody had a little individual approach to this. And this was offered to me, which I did what everybody else did. And then they passed around a small sprig of sage, which went over the right ear. It was just stuck on the right ear. And that went all the way around. Everybody had a piece of sage on their ear, and then they passed around a bowl of water, which everybody drank up from. It tasted like it had a little paraffin or wax or something in it. I don't know if that's significant or not, but it had a particular sort of an oily, greasy taste, so it may have had something in it, specially treated water. While his assistants are passing this out, of course, he is still setting the stage, laying out his regalia on this altar. And he had all the pipes in a particular order around the outskirts, around the periphery of this rug. And he laid down some rattles in, which I was told were made out of deer ears, and were painted, had designs on them. He had a very, as I recall, sort of a turquoise robe, a big blanket, which he folded up in a particular way and set it on this rug. There was some sage string, a rope, which he rolled up and set on this. And then he took I think it was a sage rope that he took, and he wound it around the pipes. So sort of like making a little fence around this rug by using the pipes as fence posts. Wow. And he wound that around, and it came out just perfect. And he set that down. And he sort of like made sure everything was set, and then all the lights went out. It was pitch black. I believe that his wife, the Indian doctor's wife, opened the ceremony with a prayer, which was a prayer no different than you would hear or say in any Protestant service. The mention of the Lord and Jesus Christ was in this. It was a prayer of guidance. I don't remember much more than that.
He isn't wrapped up then?
No, he's just standing. And he's not in any particular garb at all. He's just dressed in his usual clothes.
I mean, he's not rolled up in this bundle?
No, not
mentioned.
Yet.
Oh.
I was told that I would be hearing Indian songs that I've never heard before, which was true. I had never recognized, of course, I don't recognize the Indian songs, but they started singing then, and it was group singing with a leader singing, and it was quite awe-inspiring, a sort of goose pimply type of thing, because it was, and you can imagine, a closed room, and say 50, 60 people, everybody singing, and it was something in itself.
An unfamiliar
right,
chant
right.
And everything else, right?
Right. And it was very melodious. Everybody seemed to be in excellent voice, so that made it all more powerful. And then you couldn't see anything, you could just hear that a group of people stood up. And this seemed to be one of the lines, one of the three lines of people who were prearranged. They stood up, and the Indian doctor began to sing chants, and you could see little flashes of sparks.
He's singing alone now at this time, huh? Without the accompaniment.
Right, well, this is going on. He's doing this, and the accompanying it is going on, too.
Oh, the
group singing would stop, and he would sing some, then the group singing would go on, and he would not necessarily sing. In fact, in retrospect, I'm not really sure whether he did sing or not, come to think about it.
You can't be sure.
Yeah, it may have been all group singing. But anyway, it seemed to me like he was dancing or walking around this line of people, and you could hear rattles, sound of a rattle. You could see these little very, very muted, of course I'm without my glasses, but it appeared very muted, very, very faint flashes of light, which I figured out immediately that this was the rattles, and he had some sort of flint stones in the rattles, and they were sparking, and it was glowing through this stretched deer ear rattle, and it was giving this little light. He seemed like he went down each individual in this line. It sounded like he was pounding their bodies, parts of their bodies, with the rattles. Then you went through this whole thing, and this just took perhaps 30 minutes. And then the lights came on again. And now my memory sort of... There may have been only two lines. Instead of three lines of people, there may have been only two, come to think about it again. Mm-hmm. But... the lights came on, and by this time it was getting very, very warm and stuffy in the building, and I was sweating quite profusely. And adjusting to the light, then he began to rearrange the his altar-like. And at this time, his assistant came up. If there were only two lines and the lights only came on once, and I don't remember. If there were three lines, lights came on twice, and he repeated. If there were three lines, he repeated what he had just done the first time. Mm-hmm. But they bound his hands, and can't remember if they're behind his back or not. Anyway, they bound his hands, and they wrapped him up with this blanket with the eagle on the back. And they covered him, his head up, they wrapped him up like a mummy, and tied him up, looked quite securely, bound his feet, and laid him down on the floor. Now, I don't know whether they laid him face down or face up, I didn't notice. But he was laying flat on the floor, rather tightly bound in this blanket. And the lights went off again. And the singing started up again. And almost immediately, as I recall, you could see these little flashes of light. And you could hear the sound of the rattling again. There had, in the meantime, I think there had been, you could hear another group of people stand up too. And again, the chanting and back and forth, singing, a group singing and solo singing and all this. And his wife was participating quite actively in this as a leader of some of the singing. And this went on like he was doing the entire, repeating the entire thing, going down the line, seeming like he was spending time with each individual, the sound of the rattles sounding like it's beating on their body again, and all the way down. And when it was all over then, the lights came on again, and of course he was no longer bound. He was standing in front of the altar. The blanket was laying across the lap of some people across the room who were not actively participating, but were not observers only like I was, who I understand had had some tragedy in the family, and this meant that they had received a little special part of the ceremony that some special meaning, because they received the blanket. That sort of ended the sing. The whole ceremony perhaps lasted an hour and a half. And they opened the doors, and of course it was quite refreshing to get some cold air in. Everybody started to, just socialize again and talk around. And I started asking questions about, what was going on. I was asked if I felt the spirit, and was told that this flashing light was one of the spirits that was called in. Now, this particular thing was the second of a series of four on consecutive nights, and I don't recall if a special spirit was called in that night or what, but that the third and the fourth night, so he was calling in the more important spirits, and on the fourth night, the buffalo and the eagle were to be called in, and that the clown, who makes everybody laugh and gives little trinkets, would be there. I was asked if I could come to the next one by people who were sitting around me. I was more or less invited. They welcomed me to come back, because most of them knew who I was and I guess why I was there. But after that, everybody sort of cleared around, and they set out a table, and they started to put out this the meal, which there was quite a selection of food, just like any potluck picnic. And there was one dish that everybody was supposed to eat from, and this was just boiled meat and potatoes, unseasoned. Right. Mm-hmm. And everybody was to take a little bit of this. The Indian doctor and the active members of the ceremony went around and filled their plate, and I was, then everybody started to line up. The observers were to follow the people who participated in this thing. I was told I was to step into line and crowd in because, again, that sense of being an honored guest. Mm-hmm. So went through and amply filled my plate and enjoyed a delicious meal. And after the meal, there was a lot of continued socializing. People talking about tomorrow, and it's then that I learned that the people who were receiving individual attention were participating with the Indian doctor on a one-to-one relationship during the day, and they would have, I guess, private counseling, private sweat baths and all that. And the thing at night was all group. Mm-hmm. And after eating and talking around, I tried to think of a way to talk with the Indian doctor without having it seem to be forced, and he was pretty well occupied with other people, so I went up, and when it was time to leave, I thanked him, and I considered it an honor, and I felt that I learned something, told him this, and thanked him very much for allowing me to attend, and he sort of again nodded his approval and shook my hand, and then we left.
Describe him.
Oh, very average. Very average looking. I know nothing about him. He looked like he was he looked like he was a hard worker, perhaps a rancher. He had that weathered appearance. He wasn't particularly large or omnipotent in appearance. He was just an average looking individual, in his 50s perhaps. Mm-hmm. Early 50s, slender, well-muscled, lean. I think that's about all I can describe him.
And his wife?
His wife was quite attractive. I could call him sort of plain. Mm-hmm. His wife was attractive and not plain. She looked like she paid a lot of attention to her appearance and was very alert and pert looking. She had her hair pulled back in sort of a bun like in back, but it was very neat, and she looked more fashion conscious. What'd she have on? I don't know. I think she had slacks on and a white blouse.
Oh, slacks. Do you think so? Do you know what tribe they are?
No, I don't.
Was she younger than he?
Perhaps 5, 10 years. He looked older than he stated than he would actually his chronological age because of he looked like he worked hard outside and was quite weathered, whereas she looked like she'd been inside. She was more fair than he was. I would say she was probably in her late 40s and maybe 5 years younger. He may have been older. I don't know. But,
you told me something you didn't tell me. What? Didn't you say something about someone telling you to be sure and not have anything on because the spirits would come and take it away if it was a tape recorder or anything?
No.
They would come and throw it out?
No, the thing was that not have anything on that reflected light because light, the spirits had to have total darkness, almost just black void. That any light would either the spirits wouldn't come into the room or that would drive them away.
But I think that maybe we've heard from something else. There's something a little similar to
what. I thought you told me that there was
Have you talked to someone else about it at all?
No, I don't know. Maybe I read it someplace, but something about if the spirits found a watch or not particularly a watch, like a tape recorder or something, that it was Stan and Frank the next night told us that. We were talking about up at Klein's, and he said that if they found a tape recorder, if there was anything, a record player, even one night this man had his hearing aid thrown across the room that was in his pocket.
Well, supposedly, I got a lot of this information from somebody who didn't really believe it and didn't participate, like, you know, Irma mm-hmm. Foster. But, so she was just repeating what people had told her. Mm-hmm. I had also heard from other people there that that people had been knocked off their feet. They had been thrown across a room during ceremonies like this. That, physical things had happened. But I don't remember hearing anything about tape recorders and things like this.
Now that you mention this about throwing it across the room, I think that there were supposed to have been a couple little boys that were making fun of something that was happening, and they got pretty badly shaken.
Right, this is right. The parents seem to be very, very attentive to their children to make sure their children are not making noise or fooling around. Mm-hmm. Of course, the kids were always, before it started, were hitting each other and giggling and all this. Mm-hmm. But once the ceremony started, the kids sort of changed, like they really really knew what might be going on, and it meant something to them, whether or not their parents had coached them. But they didn't goof around at all. They acted like they'd been through many of these and knew exactly what was going on. And a lot of the people I talked to couldn't explain it. It happened like it was supposed to happen. That it was one of those things that they didn't know whether they believed in or not. I got the idea that they didn't know whether they really believed in it or not, but it happened because that's what happens. Mm-hmm. I don't think they could really explain it much more than this.
Did you hear much in the line of, kind of thrashing around while he was fighting the spirit to get out of the blanket?
I don't remember that. Mm-hmm. I found myself detracted every once in a while. I was paying so close attention, but there was a small leak of light out of one of the windows that was only 6-8 feet from me. That I'd concentrate on that before I'd realize it was this little piece of light from mm-hmm. a yard light sliver coming in, just faintly, that I don't recall hearing any thrashing. I was struck by the suddenness of once the lights went out when he was bound, that the rattling and the sparks began to... Mm-hmm. I thought, man, you know, he really had to get out of that fast, assuming that it was him, see?
Yeah.
I tried to be very objective about it, and everything that happened immediately explained it in my own mind.
Do you think that was him, or do you think it was
I think it was him. I don't know who it was, unless it was somebody, you know, one of his assistants.
What did his troop consist of? Or, you know, besides that,
there was
enumerate them.
Him and his wife. There was the one lead singer that the one that had the list of the seating arrangement of the mm-hmm. participants.
Is he the Bishop man?
I think he's from Bishop, yes.
Uh-huh. I his name later.
And as I understand it, if I can only remember the guy from Yarrington. But these guys are, Ellison McMasters Jr., he participated too, because they were also in training to be Indian doctors. But the one Indian, the man from Bishop, then Ivan. Ivan. In Yarrington. Ivan.
I can find it now.
Okay. Anyway, the man from Yarrington and his wife were singing. Once we get Ivan identified, Ellison McMasters Jr. seemed to stand off the side. He was in charge, it seemed like, of making sure it was dark, black, that there weren't any, wasn't any light coming in, and Standard seemed to be controlling the lights.
So those were the two that I may have heard called the guards.
Perhaps, yeah. Mm-hmm. Right, because that's right, because he's the, to make sure nobody comes in and goes out.
Uh-huh.
Right, Allison Jr.
Yeah.
And there may have been another door at the other end that that had been previously sealed that I didn't notice that Standard was standing by.
Uh-huh. Did Hazel McMasters?
I don't know who she is. So. Uh-huh. Oh, she was there. She was there.
Yeah.
But
was active.
Allison's wife.
Yeah.
Allison Jr.'s wife. She was there, but I don't... I had her pointed out to me. I mm-hmm. don't know her, and I don't recall that she participated at all.
Sorry, it wasn't in that after all. Hanson.
Ivan Hanson.
Okay.
Ivan Hanson, right. He and his wife actively participate, and Ivan supposedly has sings in Campbell Ranch in Yerington,
uh-huh.
from what I understand.
Well, that's a fantastic story. And then you haven't talked to them about when the buffalo and the eagle come in.
Well, apparently this is on the fourth night, and this is the end, the
culmination
of the whole thing. And this is when the real medicine comes in, when they've called in the eagle and the mm-hmm. buffalo. And the buffalo is the number one, as I recall. Is that right?
I don't know.
And the buffalo spirit is the number one spirit, or the most important spirit, and the eagle is right second.
Do you happen to
that
know,
may be reversed, on, but I think.
If you have a chance to talk to any of these people about it, are these two animals this particular doctor's own private powers that he's bringing in?
I don't know. I don't know. I got the idea that this was like, God and Jesus Christ, that analogy.
So that they would be
a universe.
Powers for the other, mm-hmm. for everybody there. This would be awfully interesting to find out whether he was calling in his own
or
particular powers, or whether they were the powers of other people. To other people also.
That rug had an eagle on it, as I recall, mm-hmm. that he threw on that was on the lap.
Mm-hmm.
I assume he tossed it over there, but anyway, when the lights came on, it was on this lap, the eagle that he was tied up with. Mm-hmm.
What kind of a rug do you mean when you say a rug?
Well, it was a robe rug. It was like a big blanket. It looked like it was made out of wool or perhaps mm-hmm. a heavy flannel, mm-hmm. and had this... rather elaborate. Didn't think it was beads, but it wasn't woven into it. It was it could have been painted, or it could have been beaded on, or embroidered on. Right. It was. It sort of got immediately wrapped up when the lights came on at the end. He immediately. Oh, I forgot one thing. The lights came on at the end. All the pipes with the colored cloth were gone.
Mm-hmm.
They were all wrapped up, tied up separately, and they were no longer in the standards. The sage rope that had bordered mm-hmm. the pipes was gone and rolled up in a ball. I think, come to think about it too, he had the pipe that you smoked, he smoked that in there somewhere. And he passed this around amongst the people that were singing and leading the ceremony. Yeah. And I think some of the active participants puffed on the I'll call it the peace pipe type mm-hmm. of thing.
Was it passed to you?
I don't recall it being passed around the room. I think it was only involved in the people that were involved in the ceremony.
Could you tell by the smell of it what was being smoked?
There was smoldering sage in the room mm-hmm. all the time, and it had that burning sage smell in the room all the time. Mm-hmm. So I couldn't tell. I may have gotten my sequence out of whack, too. That water may have been passed around after the ceremony was over,
mm-hmm.
instead of right at the beginning with the smoldering sage and such.
It's hard to remember those things the first time. Another time you'd easily remember.
I was. The people were quite interested in my reaction. You know, I got a lot of what do you think? You know, like this, and they seemed to be quite interested in what I thought, being a medical doctor and all this. They felt like they wanted to ask me, "Do you believe it?" Mm-hmm. And I kept saying, "I don't." I said, "I don't understand it." But I was definitely not going to be trapped into anything that they might think that I was mocking them or anything like this. So, after the thing was all over, the kids went out and played. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure that people socialized and may have spent all night. I don't know, maybe they played hand games or something like this. I don't know, but they looked like they were sitting around, and that the evening did not end quickly after the ceremony. Mm-hmm.
Had you heard about making your application for being one of the participants with this pipe?
This is what I sort of found out after the ceremony. I was asking around, trying to find out, you know, what was going on, what these things meant. And this is what I was told, that an individual approaches the Indian doctor prior to the ceremony.
His assistant, first.
I think it's just direct to the Indian doctor.
Well, first you go, and then he gives you your pipe, and then you take it into the Indian doctor to make your request, as I gathered it from I got this from him.
I don't know.
Did you get that?
No, it really didn't come out very straight, clear on how, but somebody, I thought that, my informant was Irma Foster again, who was just repeating what somebody mm-hmm. told her, and she really didn't know, that the person is told to get a certain color of cloth and to bring that to him, and then the pipe is made up. But I thought that she said that the Indian doctor told them what color to get. Well, maybe the assistant then makes up the pipe and then the individual gives it to the Indian doctor.
Well, but, as I gathered it from Edna, and I mentioned it, she's the one I heard this from. You go, when you want something, especially want to be a participant, you go and you're ushered into the room with the assistant. And he takes this pipe and holds it over the smoking sagebrush. She didn't say sagebrush, she just said over the smoke, I imagine it was sagebrush. And it also has smoke in it. The thing is lit. And then you hold this in a certain position and you go into the other room where the doctor is and state your case and then bring it right back out again. And check and see if you talk to somebody, see if my visual image that I've gotten is probably good with that. Because I hadn't heard about the little pipes or pipe symbols or whatever.
Well, I was told they were pipes. They actually looked like little stick dolls with a head, like a lollipop with a mm-hmm. round head covered with a colored cloth on a long stick. Mm-hmm. And you're talking about holding a pipe. When they pass the peace pipe or the main pipe around, they held it. And how I was told that they had to hold it in one particular direction, towards the east or something like this, when they received it. And when they puffed the smoke and blew it out, they had to pass it on again and constantly hold the pipe in a particular direction. One end pointing east, and I can't remember what it was, but they did that, and they passed it down the group of people who were the lead singers and drummers and all this. And I think then they returned it back to the Indian doctor, and he smoked it and then put it down.
That's a vivid description.
Did you say that April McLeod got escorted in by herself and put in some place?
Well, this is what I was just told, that she was there for some individual ceremony, and that took place during the day, and she had spent a lot of time with the Indian doctor, and he was making many recommendations, which would involve a number of rather complicated things for her to do, I guess, which I didn't really understand. Anyway, he told her that she had to do certain things, and it was she was there all 4 days and was spent the daytime with him and all this, rather involved.
What? Thyroid.
Yeah. But,
And after it was over, you just ate and left?
Well, they had the meal, and, they had a prayer over the meal before everybody ate, an Indian prayer, and then they went, everybody
Who did
served
that?
Up. I think Standard Frank did that.
Uh-huh. Was it in Paiute or English?
I don't remember.
Probably there's enough mixed words that you knew what was going on. I don't
remember. I'd forgotten about that until just now that they had the prayer. So I tell you, I was so relieved to be able to breathe fresh, cool air that I was just soaked. And of course, it was quite close. Combination of all the bodies giving off their heat and the smoldering sage and all this. I was told that I had to come back to the fourth night to see the clown. Now, that was all it was referred to as a clown. But I gathered that it was this the humorous spirit that played little tricks and made people laugh and sort of...
I wonder if he has any coyote connotations.
I don't know. But one of the biggest tricks was, you know, people would find... after the ceremony, the clown ceremony, they said that I found a dime in my hand or had a piece of candy in my ear, you know, and these little mischievous tricks that that everybody looked forward to having the clown do something to them. Which
this is just great. Do you have more? Exhausted you?
I can't think of anything. I'm not exhausted. I can't think of anything else. I was told that he came around here about every 6 months. Yeah. He went to Shearer's, to Bishop in Yerington, and then you mentioned a fourth place.
I'm trying to think where the fourth place was, though.
It seemed like the people that were at Shearer's, I gathered, were, you know, they would go to Bishop when he would be in Bishop, and they would go to Yerington when he'd be in Yerington. Yeah. They seemed to, this one group seemed to be a rather complete group that would... visit him whenever he was in Nevada. Mm-hmm. Let's see, our nurse, one of our nurses who is Pima, Marge Pima, mm-hmm. from Sacaton, knows about this Indian man, and Indian doctor, because she's from Wyoming. She was from Lander, Wyoming.
Were there any claims of any curing? Or do you know what any of their problems were that were these psychological troubles or plain illnesses? Or I don't mean to go into the medical part, but were they medically ill or disturbed?
Well,
or do you know?
I know of only one, and that's the April. And I understand that she was participating in the same. Because she was nervous and jittery,
yes, okay.
which is a symptom of hyperthyroid.
Gotcha.
I gathered that these were similar ailments. What?
Standard was about that boy that broke his leg.
Oh, okay. Here was one. Here was one incident. That's a good point. One of the boys there, I don't know what, I think it was this particular ceremony, fell down and broke his arm out there running around.
While they were playing that day, huh?
And they brought him into the Indian doctor, and the Indian doctor fixed it. His mother, my story here could be almost hearsay because I didn't see the patient, but his mother brought the boy over to the clinic, and he didn't have a broken arm. She didn't quite think things were right, and his arm wasn't broken. You know, as far as we could tell by X-ray. So there's one. That's one of the instances. I was told about a little girl who had a dysplastic hip. But we picked up over at the hospital. We made the diagnosis just when she was starting to walk because the mother noticed she limped. The family preferred to have her treated in the Indian way, and she apparently has been undergoing some rather extensive treatments and things. Well, this story, I was involved with this, and I knew this from first hand. This story was mentioned to me by one of the people that I was talking to about after the thing was over, who said something like, you know, it's amazing, I don't understand it, but it's really powerful. You know, so-and-so, the little girl whose hip, you know, she couldn't even walk. Mm-hmm. And now look at her. Well, she walks, but she limps. And I thought this was interesting because when it first came to light, she had a problem. She couldn't walk because she's just learning how to. So therefore, mm-hmm. she walked very poorly. And now she's walking better, but she still has her limp. And I thought this was sort of a, mm-hmm. you know, to my side of looking at that and his side of looking at that, which he says, you know, her treatment, her participation with the Indian doctor has done wonders. It's making her walk. And I thought that quite interesting. Mm-hmm.
Was he one of these people, you know, that was...
I don't think she was there. I know her only from pictures in your book and uh-huh. then from seeing her on the Fallon Float and the Fallon Parade. Uh-huh. And, I've never seen her any other time.
She's somewhat related to the McMasters, yeah. to Hazel. And Hazel calls her grandma. And I know that she's gone down to Bishop many times for this. But I don't know whether she was at this particular one.
I don't know. I don't really know if I would recognize her in a group of people or not.
Well, she's a large woman.
Yeah.
She's.
I recognize her in your pictures.
Somebody says that she has her dignity would put the Queen of England to shame.
But in a group of people of elderly Indian women, I don't know if I could just look at them and say, "Oh, there's Wesley mm-hmm. George." I don't know her that well. I haven't seen her that much. Mm-hmm. But in a particular situation, I can usually pick her out because, you know, that's supposed to be her because in that setting or whatever. She, mm-hmm. See, who else? I can't think of... What?
Are you trying to think of people who were there?
I'm trying to think of any specific instances where, you know, the Singh has provided a cure or something.
What kind of troubles were they bringing to
it? I don't know. I made a snap guess only that they would be what we would probably put into the psychosomatic disorder, headaches, perhaps marital problems. I'm guessing. If this is the case, you know, I can see medically, I can see a real value in this.
You didn't get any hint that some people were being visited by their dead relatives.
I had no hint of that along those lines at all. No.
Look out for that too, because so, this is a real potent force. It's a real thing.
What I'll have to do is.
Ima was telling me about how there was a woman that was wanted to have a baby very uh-huh. badly, and she was not getting pregnant, and she went, and she said she was got very large, but the baby had no movement yet, like she was almost ready to deliver it, and they were sure it was dead, and they went to the scene, and he concentrated on her during the day somewhat, and that night when the scene was over, you could see the baby jumping around inside, and it was born like 3 days later, perfectly healthy.
Oh, that's a wonderful testimony for this.
I likened the whole ceremony to, you know, our psychotherapy group and individual, and consider it, from what I could gather, probably the same thing as, and just as effective to those people who can believe in it, then just as ineffective or ineffective as if you don't believe in it, and outside of that, whether or not there was more more actual acute medical healing going on? I don't know. Of course, if that's the case, I'd be very skeptical. My profession would not allow me to be anything other. But
another good question: you might find out, if you have any chance to talk to people, if they have had an experience with peyote and how this compares with the peyote ceremony.
It'd be interesting to know if that was in that pot, smoking pot, if you smoked it at all. I mean, if they had that.
They don't drink, they don't smoke peyote, do they?
The only peyote that I
drink it or chew it.
Yeah, that I know about is it's a button, it's a cactus button, and you bite off a chunk and chew it.
Or there's a, for those that have very poor teeth, they brew it.
Oh.
And
that's nauseating. I drank some, what's the tea?
Ephedra?
No, that's not the name it was called.
The Mormon tea? Or
Chaparral tea. I think this is what Abe Abramson up in Nixon has, the root.
Chaparral.
Isn't that, no?
We don't have chaparral.
Well, this is what it was called, yeah. But the root came from Nixon.
Yeah.
And
it belongs to the Doc family, or the, too tired tonight to be absolutely sure which one. There's the 4 o'clock and the sand Doc are two of them that, I've even gone to dig it where he's dug. but then there's another one you want to look out for. It's just the real Jesus medicine. It's the real Jesus medicine. I'm sure it just goes in very certain places, and I'm sure it's anise. It goes up in the hills. And,
Did they have that tea that night?
No, this was something different that somebody got. I don't know whether Shackleton got the root or what, but anyway, we brewed up some tea over at the hospital, and we're just trying it. Very, very creosote tasting stuff. I was told that this was a chaparral tea, and I didn't know what that didn't mean. Name didn't mean anything to me. I just tried a big. In fact, I drank a whole big glass of it, and it just tasted like chewing on an old fence post. You know, creosote fence post.
Well, it's awfully interesting. I would like to check to see just how...